Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting to an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably always offered more. Let me introduce the Brieflies, and then we'll get into our show. Guiding us from behind the board of Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and keeping us on course, even if it is into the treetops like he did with Truman, it's wingman, wingmate, arbiter, arbitrator, he's also an arbiter, but an arbitrator, mediator, two-time half-bright scholar, former constitutional law professor, and Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm good. I was going to add one thing and maybe subtract a couple to that introduction. I used to sell Amway products. When Amway had two products. They had the washing machine soap with and without suds. I should have stuck with it. I'd be a multimillionaire.
Stuck with it, exactly.
Right. No Tupperware sales. Okay, just you never know.
I'm doing fine, Bruce.
Oh well, good. And all those decisions we make in our past when we should have stuck with them, right?
Yes.
Also, joining us is former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas devotee and former military intelligence officer, and former chair of the Vachon Community Care Board, Truman O'Brien, joining us from his home. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
All right. And also for our guests and new listeners, Truman and Craig landed their small plane in the treetops when they had an emergency landing on a trip from Bend, Oregon to Vachon just a little over 2 years ago. So that's why we refer to their treetop landing skills. Also zooming in from home is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate, or at least tolerate. Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Good to be here, Bruce. And the planet seems more livable somehow today. So glad to be here with everybody.
Good. And also joining us today is Esther Lacerno Dine, who is the CEO and Executive Director of the Seattle Indian Health Board. So welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. Before we jump into talking about the Seattle Indian Health Board and the purchase of the former Vachon Community Care Facility, let's take a moment and check in with everybody about what special things you've experienced this past week. So Truman, what's up with you?
Well, the most special thing is today is day 15, and although I still have a positive test line on the COVID test, it's very faint today, and my congestion is almost gone. You can still hear a little of my voice, but I think I'm finally going to beat this COVID thing today, finally. So it's been a long haul, a lot of fun.
But your hair looks good. Still.
Thank you. That's an inside joke, Esther. You know, we'd have to explain that in a long, detailed explanation.
Craig, how about you? How's your week been?
My week has been selfish. It was my birthday last week, and it's basically been all eating and entertaining. Went to see Bruce Mercer and Bob Horsley's Ride the Divide at the Vashon Center for the Arts. It was a great presentation. Went to Mays for dinner. Went over to my friends Rob Mosley and Fiona Hope. It was Rob's birthday a couple days. We had a great meal. Toad in the Hole. You know Toad in the Hole? Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what we ate. They're not real toads. They're just, you know, it's just called that. Then I went to see Tim Couldn't Make It at Dig Deep. That was great. So I basically just mostly played. Didn't even work on any cars. So,
wow. Sounds like a good week.
It was.
Hey, Esther, how about you? You must be just turning around in circles with so much going on. But how's your week been?
There's a lot going on. I'm actually calling in today from our all staff meeting with 250 staff. And so we get together about once a quarter, which is amazing. So I just love to see all of our staff faces. But I think the highlight for my week personally is my son finally has hair long enough that allowed him to put it in a braid. And he's very proud of it. He's been growing it out and has looked quite wild for a while. And so now he's a 9-year-old boy with a braid, and he's just proud as ever.
Oh, fantastic.
Tremendous. Bruce, you need to work on that.
Yeah, I do. A long way to go, right?
Yeah.
Kevin, how about you? How's your week been?
My week has been good. We some home projects are moving along. The bird storage cabinet that I'm had been working on for quite a while is just down to literally the last couple of things. Some decoration, making sure that the top is going to fit without allowing, you know, the rodents and the insects to get into the bird feed. But the thing that really strikes me about this last week is, as the season's changing and we're seeing a little bit more warming, I walked out of the house the other day, and it was one of those days where the mist is just hanging up in the trees. It wasn't really a foggy day, but you could just see that the fir trees in the mist and a little bit of sunbeam just starting to pierce through the clouds. And it was kind of the perfect day when a pileated woodpecker would announce its presence out in the forest, when the muffled sound of the pileated woodpecker is so really wonderful, you know, when it echoes through the fog. So that was, I guess, the highlight of my week so far.
Fantastic. Yep. I'm not sure we live on the same island. I've not seen as much spring as you seem to be seeing, but still feels a lot like winter out there to me.
Well, I am a Northwest native, and maybe you may be the same, but I'm used to it being worse.
I grew up in Florida, so so this feels like winter.
Mm-hmm.
My week has been filled with basically getting ready for a fundraiser for the museum. We have a gala on Saturday evening. And so that's been, it's been a kick working with the folks putting that together. And Esther, the four of the Brieflys, we're going to have a table there. We're going to have the Briefly table at this fundraiser. So so let us know when Indian Health Board has a fundraiser, and we'll get a Briefly table together for you. Okay.
We will. That sounds amazing.
All right. Today is a significant day in history. Of course, all days are significant, but today is Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's the 27th day of Nisan, which is the first month of the Jewish ecclesiastical year, and it marks the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. In Hebrew, Holocaust Remembrance Day is called Yom HaShoah. So and a significant day. It's also the day in the U.S. that we call Tax Day, which is usually the 15th of April. But this year it was on a Saturday, which means taxes would have been due on Monday, April 17th. But April 16th in Washington, D.C. is Emancipation Day, the day in 1862 when D.C. abolished slavery. And of course, April 16th is a Sunday this year, so the D.C. holiday is Monday, April 17th. So Tax Day is moved to the next day today, April 18th. So we all got a sort of a four-day extension on our taxes, if you will. Today is also the day of the great San Francisco earthquake in 1906, and the day in 1775 that Paul Revere made his midnight ride, which resulted in the next day's battles of Lexington and Concord that began the American Revolution. So, interesting days. Let's shift to small talk and talk a little bit with Esther about the Seattle Indian Health Board purchase of the former Vashon Community Care Facility. So, Esther, it's a joy to have you here and to learn a little bit about this purchase of the Vashon Island site. So, Esther, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, about what brought you to work for the Seattle Indian Health Board. And then we'll jump into talking about the purchase of VCC.
Sure. First, I have to introduce myself in an appropriate way. So, Yate Bene, my name is Esther Lucero, and I am Diné on my mom's side, Latina on my dad's side, and I am third generation in my family to be raised in an urban environment. So it's actually no coincidence that I have the privilege of serving as the president and CEO for the Seattle Indian Health Board. I was actually born and raised in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Public health and community health work that we do today is actually my second career. I had a first career in corporate world. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to go to college right out of high school like others did. And so I found myself in retail and kind of worked my way up very quickly. And before I knew it, I was the youngest district manager in the company and number one in the company, and found myself miserable, just not happy. And so I remember literally standing on a yacht in Miami, receiving all of these awards, and I called my mom and I said, "Mom, you know, I should be happy. You know, I have money, I'm traveling, you know, I'm young and I can do all of these things." And she's like, "It's because you're not doing anything for your community." And so it was at that point that I decided to go back to school. And so I took all the money that I'd saved and I went back to get my undergraduate degree in Native American Studies with a biochemistry minor because I thought I was going to go to medical school. But I fell in love with federal Indian law while in my undergrad and other parts of just academia, and I found myself pursuing public policy. So, you know, I just shared this with the health district when I met with a few folks from there the other day, that I'm simply a policy wonk. That's really what I like to do. That's what I'm passionate about. So I made my way to the Seattle Indian Health Board. Prior to coming here, I was actually at the California Consortium for Urban Indian Health, where we led advocacy for 10 urban Indian health programs across the state of California. Really amazing, passionate work. And I feel like I started the work doing HIV case management. So that's kind of my history and background. And I've been in the Seattle area for a little over 7 years. In my time at the Seattle Indian Health Board, we've experienced massive growth and expansion. And it's a real honor to serve our relatives. We call our patients our relatives, so you'll hear me refer to it that way. You know, every day, I just feel lucky.
Well, great. Well, and we feel lucky to have you here with us today. So thanks for that introduction. Appreciate it. Could you tell us a little bit about the Seattle Indian Health Board, the Thunderbird Treatment Center, and the work you did there, and what led you to close that facility?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Seattle Indian Health Board is a little older than I am. We've been in existence for about 52 years. We rose from the social justice movements of the late 1960s and early 70s. You know, with the takeover of Fort Lawton. And so we came about because there was basically a group of Indian aunties who came here through urban relocation programs of the 1950s and said, you know, just because we're no longer living on our reservations or in our tribal lands doesn't mean that the benefits you promised us due to the cessation of land should disappear. And so now we operate our community health side, where we operate an array of health and human services. So primary care, behavioral health, both substance use disorder, inpatient and outpatient, mental health, dental services, and then an array of human services. And then on our public health side, which is led by our executive vice president, Abigail Echohawk, we run our Urban Indian Health Institute. We are deemed a public health authority, just like King County is, just like the state of Washington is, and we operate one of 12 tribal epidemiology centers in the nation and the only one that has a national scope because we serve all of the urban programs across the country. That is important because that tells you that we do everything from prevention, early intervention, into care and treatment. And we do everything centered on our cultural epistemologies, so traditional Indian medicine.
Great. So tell me a little bit about the Thunderbird Center, where it was located and why he closed it and why you started looking for a Vashon site.
Yes. So Thunderbird Treatment Center was started in the 1980s by a former executive director, Joanne Kaufman. And, you know, it was an amazing facility, incredible recidivism rates. Really, we have stories from generations of our community, people who were able to, you know, move into recovery. And it was in Rainier Beach, and it was in an old building. It was actually a building that was originally used for unwed mothers. And so it tells you that it was grandfathered in, so it was not ADA compliant. And quite frankly, it was falling apart. And, you know, it's pretty difficult. Pre-pandemic, it was very difficult for organizations like ours to get facilities and infrastructure dollars. That has really dramatically changed. But we realized that it would be better for us to sell the property and look for a new site than to try to rehab it and to get it to an ADA compliant position. So that's what we did. We made the difficult decision to pause the services. In hindsight, I don't know, I think Creator was looking upon us because the pandemic hit right after. And it would have been really challenging to operate an inpatient facility during a pandemic. So my heart goes out to all those folks who had to do that. So we've been looking for a new property ever since. And, you know, I think this is really important. We are actually working with the King County Assessor's Office to identify potential properties. We had narrowed it down to 11 sites that we were interested in. And it was through our board of director, one of our board members, Shelley Means, that we learned of the VCC property. And, you know, when I remember just visiting there with her, we were peeking in the windows. We didn't even have like our realtor, you know, reach out or anything like that. But I remember this healing can happen here. You know, I just remember feeling that. And so I feel lucky to be beautiful as Shelley Means and as thoughtful to introduce us to that property. But that said, I also want you to know that we had been working on even before. Right? I'm sorry, you all have frozen a bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. You're breaking up a little bit.
We can hear you. You are breaking up a little bit. If it gets worse, you may want to turn your video off so you have a little more bandwidth there for your voice.
Okay. Let's see here. Again, I'm using a guest Wi-Fi.
And
looks like she's freezing up on us.
Okay. Okay, there we go.
Great. Good.
We're back again.
Okay. So I think one of the things I want to make clear is that we were actually working to secure resources even before the VCC property was in play. We recognize that this administration is very concerned with behavioral health issues. And it was with the help of Councilmember Zahalai that we put together a legislative task force to begin working on that federal allocation and state capital dollars as well to purchase a residential treatment program. I know that there was some concern that, that Congresswoman Jayapal didn't ask community, you know, and that their resources somehow that should have gone to Vashon. But I want you to know that the resources would have gone to us even if we were in North Bend, for example, because we were looking to secure resources for a residential treatment program to meet that very, very important gap in Washington. So yes, that's how we came about. And now we're excited.
Great. Well, we appreciate that and appreciate knowing that sort of background on it. Kevin, you had a question for
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Bruce. Esther, first of all, I just want to thank you for example, the Beachcomber interview that you did and the ability to communicate and just raise awareness within our community of the work that you do and the prospects, you know, for that facility, which you now have ownership of. On behavioral health, you'd mentioned that. I was just this morning sent a letter to our elected officials because there's a bill in the state legislature about funding behavioral health centers. 24/7 coverage. So it is a big deal. It's a major issue. And a local Dr. Eve Suskin presented to the Vashon Mori Community Council a couple of years ago about behavioral health on the islands and the fact that it's underfunded and in need of assessment. So I'll get off my soapbox, but ask you a question. I've heard about this term breaking the cycle of addiction. I've also heard people claim that lower rates of recidivism are achieved by temporarily distancing a person from their culture and their environment. I don't know to what extent you see that as helpful, but I'm curious to what extent does changing a person's environment, even temporarily, contribute to the recovery from addiction? And does a Vashon clinic present a safe environment removed from trauma that would allow your patients to experience this sort of stepping aside temporarily from the community in which they participated?
Sure. You know, Bruce mentioned earlier that it's, you know, Jewish Holocaust Remembrance Day. And the reason I raise that is because, you know, Dr. Maria Yellowhorse Braveheart, who is a Lakota researcher, identified that we have a lot in common with Jewish Holocaust survivors and their families in regards to historical trauma. And so historical trauma means that, you know, if the trauma has happened in the past, it's a cumulative psychological wounding emanating from mass group trauma experiences over the lifespan and across generations, meaning that you can see generations later, you know, impacts of that trauma. So when I think about Thunderbird Treatment Center and I think about healing and addiction, overcoming addiction, addiction just is a symptom of that historical trauma. And so what we work on at the Thunderbird Treatment Center is reinstituting that cultural strength and those cultural values and strengthening cultural identity. So to answer your question, Kevin, sometimes that is, I mean, I think that when we think about Western modalities related to sobriety and recovery, yes, it's about like taking them from out of their, you know, experiences or maybe easy access and things like that. Some of that's true. But what's most important is giving folks an opportunity to reconnect with land, reconnect with their cultural ways of being, knowing cultural practices, and sometimes that takes an environment that that allows for that. And quite frankly, you know, I feel like Native people, we as Native people, have always been given the scraps. Right? We gave up all 90% of our land with the promise of, you know, a few benefits. You know, healthcare is one of them, education, food, access to, you know, workforce, like those types of things. And I've always said that, you know, we should have the Betty Ford of Indian country. Our people deserve the best. They deserve beautiful, you know, land. They deserve a healing environment. They deserve clean air. They deserve an environment that is welcoming and warm and part of community. And that is what Vashon offers us. So, and I will tell you that it's very important that we stay connected to our tribal communities and families. So reintegration and aftercare and making sure that we strengthen life skills and work skills so that folks can really be successful, you know, in their recovery is really important to us. And that's our model. It's holistic, it's powerful, and it's strengths-based. And you know, again, it's my privilege to do this work.
Yeah, Truman.
Full disclosure, Esther, I'm the former president of the board of directors of VCC and of the corporation. I held that position for 5 years, and after leaving that position, I started the VCC Foundation and ran that for another 3 years. So I have quite a history with that facility, as you can imagine. And so consequently, I'm of two minds. One, I'm really disappointed that the facility is no longer doing what it was built for, and that is caring for the Vashon elders, in their later life. And at the same time, I'm thrilled to see that it's being used, going to be used by an organization that looks like they really know what they're doing and going to take care of the facility and will, put it to very good use. My question is, I know that during the time that that we ran the facility, funding was always a huge issue. We had Medicaid and we had the state program for the assisted living. And it was always a balancing act between getting our payer mix correct, where we would have enough Medicaid and enough private pay to make it work. So I'm wondering about how's your funding and do you get state or federal funding, or does it all come from the tribe, or how is your funding managed?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful question. And I just want to extend my gratitude to you for doing that work. Elders housing and senior living is very important, and it's disappointing that our systems are not aligned to support that in a sustainable fashion. We're seeing a lot of facilities like that close. That said, it's important to understand that we're a federally qualified health center, which means that we're funded through HRSA, HRSA 330 grant. That means that we're part of a safety net network. And so we are required to see all people regardless of their ability to pay. We are also deemed an urban Indian health organization, and that runs through the Indian Health Service. So that is an additional base contract that we utilize to be able to support our services. And we do have billing revenue as well. So we have built a proforma, much like you just described, that has a different, has a payer mix. So 60% is still dedicated to Medicaid. The other thing that is really key is that we do have a plan to dedicate 10 beds to serving pregnant and parenting people, and they can keep children with them up to the age of five, two children up to the age of five. And that's why we have to do some renovation to make sure that we have, the right daycare options for them. Now, that said, we also, through our wraparound services, so there's the residential treatment program that offers a billable rate. Now, our billable rate, we are part of the overall, it's called the ITU system of care. So it's the Indian Health Service system. The I stands for IHS Direct Hospitals. The T are tribal 638s. So tribes that have taken authority over their healthcare delivery systems. And we are the U, we're the urban Indian health programs. And so that means we are carved out into a separate billing system with the state. And we can work with our tribes directly. So I want you to know that we already have a ready-made population. It's not like completely full with Native folks, but Native folks will be prioritized. And so that gives us a different billing option as well. We also have the ability to negotiate a specific encounter rate as part of that tribal system that makes it a little bit more sustainable as well. So if you think about like our wraparound services, so primary care, medically assisted treatment, mental health services, dental seems to be the thing that is most neglected when folks are in recovery. We will be able to provide all of those services for folks in our treatment program. Wow. And for others.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. Thank you.
Yes. And so I do know that there are worries that we will go away and we won't.
Great. Yeah. I have a follow up with that a little bit. It's a residential sort of inpatient treatment center. Will that be available to islanders, and will there be outpatient kind of options available for islanders? What's going on with that?
Yes, that's a great question. It will be available to islanders. We do recognize that there are some addiction challenges. Predominantly, it looks like alcohol seems to be the substance that is most concerning there. Additionally, we do operate an intensive outpatient program, and we do outpatient addiction services as well.
Great. Craig, you had a question, right?
Yeah, I had a few. I'll start out at the beginning. I think I've been made the heavy here. As you probably know, Esther, the island is quite the rumor mill. It's a wonderful community. I've lived here for 26 years. No, 36 years. 36 years. Good grief. I lost a decade. There are concerns and there are fears, especially when you talk about addiction. And the question that some people have asked me to ask has to do with are some of your patients individuals who've been diverted by the courts as a result of criminal charges, and if so, what type of security do you provide? I understand that you didn't have an incident, a violent incident, the entire time when you had the Rainier facility. So if you could maybe allay some fears on the part of some people.
Sure, yeah. We were in Rainier Beach. We were right in a neighborhood. We were literally across the street from houses, and we never had an incident of criminal activity from relatives we were serving on the community. And I shared this with in the Beachcomber. You know, I'm more concerned with what folks might try to bring to the facility. You know, I really am. And so when I think about security, I think about caring for our relatives and making sure that we take care of their safety. And if you, you know, we have the responsibility of having children and families. That is very important to us. And so, yes, I mean, we do plan to implement a full security system, much like we had in Rainier Beach. We actually have on-site security as well, like in with people, you know, being able to provide that service. And, you know, to answer your question around criminal activity, sure. I mean, folks in addiction, they do a lot to support their addiction. Does that mean that we're going to be solely court ordered? No. We have a variety of folks coming to us in many different ways. Yeah, I'm more concerned with transportation than criminal activity.
That was my next question, actually. It's my understanding that in a facility like this, a lot of the issue is getting people to and from their jobs and yes. and that sort of thing. And here we are on an island.
Yes.
You did make an allusion to a potential ferry. Transportation or additional ferry transportation, which tweaked a lot of individuals' interest. How are you going to address those transportation issues?
I think what I said was I'm working on it.
Right.
I don't have a sole solution. I don't have a sole solution.
Comment.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can tell you that, you know, I've had discussions with King County about maybe securing a specialized contract, 24-hour contract with a water taxi. I've looked into purchasing a water taxi. I've talked with some of our tribal partners about, you know, some of them operate commercial ferries. So I'm working on that problem. I do recognize that it is important. You know, people go into recovery at any time, and we need to make sure that we are available to receive them in a good way and support their needs immediately. I also recognize that folks on the island have a need for emergency transport. We just gathered some data on, you know, those emergency evacuations and what types of ailments folks most experience, the need for after hours care. We're looking into all of that. I'm not going to promise solutions, but I can tell you we'll work on it. I can also tell you that I have an absolutely incredible executive team. You know, I have the fun job. I get to come up with all of these ideas. I get to speak with folks like you, and my team is diligently working, you know, to make it happen. And we have proven success in that. You know, we opened 3 additional clinics in the midst of a pandemic. That should tell you a little bit of something.
I have a quick comment, and that is that on security, we did have a wonder guard part in the building itself, but that kept the residents from wandering out, not people coming in. So perhaps you can tweak that a little and change it to the coming in. The other comment I had was that one of the issues that we had as an employer, I think we were the second largest employer on the island, was to having a place for our employees to live. I mean, many of them could not afford to live on the island. So consequently, we paid for their ferry fare to come over from the Kitsap Peninsula. And I'm wondering, will your employees be resident locally, or were they going to bring them in, or how's that going to work?
We're expecting a combination of both. And also to solve some of the workforce housing needs, we're looking into that as well. Last week I was on the island three days and starting to get to know folks really quick. You may have heard about it already, but we'll be poking around and taking a look around to solve that issue as well. I mean, we're looking at about 18 to 24 months to get our renovations complete so that we can be fully functioning. We will probably do a phased in approach. We've had the keys for a week.
Wow.
So
let me follow up, Bruce, real quickly. How many individuals will you be treating at a time on average?
Well, we will have capacity for 92 beds.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Will you be treating individuals who will not be staying overnight as well?
No, it's inpatient.
Okay.
Yes. We have the capacity to do an outpatient program, right? So that would be for folks who want to come. I mean, if I think about medically assisted treatment, right? There, you have to come in to get your Suboxone or buprenorphine. And we have the capacity to do that. But this facility is dedicated to inpatient.
One more little one.
Sure.
Will you have any emergency medical services there?
Again, in serving pregnant and parenting people, we have to have a form of that. This goes back to that transportation issue, right? We also need to have the ability to transport folks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, you have a question, right?
I did, yeah. Esther, so I have a friend who tells me that their life literally was saved only after being cared for by another Indigenous group who uses presumably a lot of the same healing practices which were described in the Beachcomber interview. You may have already addressed this question partially, but I wanted to give you another opportunity to help us understand maybe why do these methods that you're using, you know, why do they work where maybe traditional Western medical practices have not been as effective?
Sure. I mean, I know that Vashon Island has a studious group of folks. So I'll give you some citations you can look into. If you look at Joseph Gahn's work or Dale Walker's work, it talks about strengthening cultural identity as a form of healing from historical trauma. And so strengthening cultural identity, I mean, you know, right now the federal government is trying to address the issue of boarding schools. So if you think about the intention of boarding schools was to strip us from our cultural identities, our languages were illegal to be spoken, our spiritual practices, and my tribe went underground, or they were also illegal. Right. And so in bringing all of those things back, our plant medicines, our herbal medicines, our songs, our prayers, we began to reconstruct that assimilation practice we began to undo that assimilation practice. And that is the key to all of our healing. And if you look at Dr. Maria Yellow Horse Braveheart's work, she runs the Takani Network, you can see a direct correlation between strengthening cultural identities, like understanding our stories, understanding our histories, and being able to kind of piece together what we lost, right? And so for us, it's called our Indigenous Knowledge Informed Systems of Care. We have care teams that are comprised of traditional Indian medicine apprentices, as well as all other health and human services providers. So again, it's a truly holistic model. And we're only able to do this because, you know, there's this movement towards integration. You know, what I say about that is I should have asked an Indian a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, there is actually that segues into another question that I had. And the way I think of this is my mother considered herself a new age practitioner, which, of course, was the rage, you know, in the 90s. That included many things, one which she claims to have been adopted from traditional Indigenous practice, which is the burning of sage. She would actually burn sage outdoors to keep her trees healthy. And I went by her house just the other day, and they're still very healthy. Some might see this as cultural appropriation. Others might appreciate a broader incorporation of the practices that you describe. What are you seeing? Are you seeing what might be called traditional indigenous practices being more widely adopted by others? What do you think about that? And what does that look like to you?
Well, there are more than 565 federally recognized tribes, each with distinct cultural ways of being and knowing. So for my tribe, Navajo ways are not the same as Lakota ways, right? You have to think about it like that. And so there isn't this like kind of pan-indigenous, homogenous approach to healing. So for us, we have our traditional Indian medicine apprentices who are kind of like, if you think about natural helpers, right? Like, so they might be collecting the rocks for the sweat lodge, or, you know, keeping the fire, or pouring water, like those types of things. So, but they're in learning. They're learning their practice. And then we have a network of traditional Indian medicine practitioners from as many diverse tribal backgrounds as we possibly can acquire, because we serve folks at the Seattle Indian Health Board from more than 350 federally recognized tribes. Wow. So it's not about creating like this homogenous pan-indigenous, you know, identity, not at all. Now, as far as others using our practices, we've always served non-natives at Thunderbird Treatment Center who've equally benefited from our modality. And I think that's really important. And there are some ways that Western medicine is finally catching up with traditional Indian medicine.
Yeah.
For example, during the pandemic, you know, our staff worked harder than we've ever worked in our lives. And we implemented the practice of smudging with white sage. Sometimes it's white sage, sometimes it's sweet grass, sometimes it's cedar, depending on the type of medicine and the practitioner who's actually offering that service. And so we smudge our building twice a day, in the morning and then before we go. And it's interesting because Western medicine finally found out that, you know, white sage actually cleanses the bacteria in the air. So imagine that, you know. So that's how I think about it. And, you know, for us, you know, our Indigenous knowledge informed systems of care, or Indigeno, is really defined on how we're all related. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes from John Trudell is, you know, if you go far enough, we were all Indigenous once. Yeah. And it's about us finding that, like, that connection.
Truman.
Yeah, I've talked about this before. I have a degree in anthropology, and one of the things that we were told during the one of our courses is that the rate of alcoholism is greater the further the distance you get from the Mediterranean, and the idea being that the further away from the biological adaptation to alcohol, the higher rate of alcoholism you get. So, like, for example, in Norway, Sweden, you know, we have a higher rate of alcoholism. And of course, you get to the Inuit people up in Alaska, they have very early late introduction to alcohol, like 1929. And so I know some of the indigenous peoples lower 48 have the same issue because of their intolerance to alcohol. And I'm wondering, do you folks take that into account in dealing with alcoholism, and do these cultural practices help get them away from that cultural, the integration part of that, I guess, it's separating them from that. Do you find that a function?
Mm-hmm. You know, what I would say is there are equal amounts of research disproving that very theory about, And so, you know, I like to take a balanced approach to, you know, my intake of knowledge. Now, one of the things that we do through our Tribal Epidemiology Center is we tell the whole story. So it's coined decolonizing data. And let me tell you what that means. Sure, in Indigenous communities, Native communities, do we have issues related to binge drinking? Yes, we do. We also have the highest rates of abstinence in our youth. from alcohol. And you don't get to hear that story.
Yeah.
And we like to tell that story. And so what I would say is our Indigeno addresses trauma and substance use as a symptom of trauma.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Of course, this was 50 years ago, or yes. 60 years ago. So.
Another yes. lost decade.
Yeah.
Well, this changed. Yeah.
So it's been a while since that theory was floated. So.
Correct.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Greg, you had a question?
No, I think most of my questions actually have been answered. I'm looking at my list here. No, once again, I think that Esther, you're a tremendous representative for the organization, and they're very lucky to have you. And thank you for joining us. Truman, you've got your hand up.
I have one very selfish question. Very selfish question. One of the things that happened when I was on the board was that the board named the dining hall in the western end of the building the Mary V. O'Brien, because my mother spent the last 8 years of her life there, and we put in a lot of money and time into the facility. I'm just wondering if that name is still there and if there's the slightest chance it might get to stay.
Again, we've had our keys for a week, and I haven't had and we are just now implementing our community engagement strategy. And so I haven't had enough conversations to answer that question.
I'm really being a little facetious, but I had to throw that out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Kevin, you had a question?
Esther, I just wanted to wrap up. You know, there's of the things we've talked about today, there's so many different perceptions about healthcare, recovery, treatment options, and things like that. You can tell that they're quite varied. And I just really appreciate the time that we've had a chance to spend here, where you can help bring your perspective and shed your expertise, your knowledge, and just the tradition of what you are bringing to us over generations that can be very helpful, you know, in addressing some really important needs in our community. So thank you for sort of dispelling some myths and helping sort of get our thinking aligned with your experience and your knowledge.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to add that when I started, I said I was of two minds, one being, you know, sorry that we're losing it. I can tell you that you've strengthened greatly the other side of that equation of being happy that you're here and going to be using this facility. I very much appreciate your candor with us, and I'm very excited to see the possibilities for the building and for what you folks are going to be able to do with it. So thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I feel like, you know, I'm really blessed to have our community, and I cannot wait to introduce you to our team. And I can't wait for you to experience the richness of our people.
Cool.
Let me follow up with that, Esther. How can Islanders help facilitate your development of the VCC facility and help facilitate you moving on to the island and becoming a part of our community?
Sure. Again, I don't have the answer to that yet. I think that conversations like this are the right beginning. And I think that as we get to know folks, you know, we're going to be meeting with different groups, then we'll have better answers. So yes, we're going to be present at the Strawberry Festival. So I can tell you that we're going to have a table there. We'll have a booth, and that will be amazing. And then we'll figure out next steps.
Great. Well, as everybody has said, we really appreciate you taking the time. We know how busy you are and how much is going on for you. And in the midst of a quarterly sort of staff meeting, to take the time and break out and talk with us, we really appreciate it very much.
Excellent.
And we want to invite you back many, many times, as often as you like.
Happy to. I mean, once you meet my team, you'll see that I'm the least favorite. I mean, when our chief health officer's name is Dr. Love, and it literally is Dr. Sosha Love, that'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
We're going to move on to a few discussions of local and national, international issues. Esther, you're more than welcome to stay and join in, but if you need to run, we certainly understand and appreciate you taking the time to join us. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I have 10 minutes to say goodbye to my team, so I'm going to head back up there.
Great.
Thank you
thank
much.
You. Thank you for
have
joining us.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, let's shift a little bit to local stuff, the Vashon Park District levy. Anybody have any insights on what's going on there?
Yeah, you know I'm going to have something to say about it.
Truman, you have something.
Yeah, I know.
About a levy on the island?
Well, the one thing about the Park District that I don't know, I know that it's 45 cents per thousand, which is the same thing that they asked for before. But I also know that dollar amount changes over time, and I don't know what that is this time. Like, for example, when you first pass a levy at 45 cents per thousand, you get a dollar amount based on that property valuation. And then the next year, you can increase that by 1%, but it's that dollar amount. And so that 45 cents might be reduced to 44 cents or 43 cents. And as property values increase, that 45 cents gets diminished until the point where it might be, 40 cents per thousand. And so when you pass a new levy at 45, you're actually increasing the amount of money that the Park District is getting because it's based on that new evaluation. So I don't know where we are this time. Mm. I have not done the research to determine that, but that is a question that should be asked as to where what is the nominal rate that we're currently paying compared to that 45 cents. So,
Truman, what do you think of the merits of the request?
I have no problem with that whatsoever. The Park District is one of the only government entities that we have on the island, and they do an amazing job. Managing our parks and the amount of programs and stuff that the Park District does will boggle your mind. I mean, I'm telling you, when I was first elected, it took me a year to learn all of the variety of things that the Park District does. And they are a huge asset to the island.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, how about you? What's your perspective on this?
Oh, is that directed to me?
Yeah, Kevin. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was actually had a question for Truman. I help correct my maybe misunderstandings. I think the Park District has to do with the music in the park at Ober Park in the summertime.
Yeah.
Of course, there's maintenance of Ober Park right in town. I think the Village Green, right, and their affiliation with the food grower agricultural community on Vashon, yeah, and the Saturday Sunday markets. I think those are all an Agron field, I suspect, right? All of those are elements of what the Park District brings to our community. Is that right?
They are. Awesome. Yeah, and in addition to that, they have two contractual agreements with the Land Trust. There's a couple of very large tracts of land, including Fisher Pond and the associated land with Fisher Pond, that belongs to the Park District, but it's managed by the Land Trust. And that agreement came about right. One of the first things that happened when I joined the board was that forging that agreement with them. And they do an amazing job. And the combination of the Park District and Land Trust is a marriage made in heaven. I mean, it really works.
Yeah, great. So thanks, Bruce, for the opportunity to ask some of those questions.
Oh, yeah, great. Sure. Well, I also wanted to turn to Truman as a former military intelligence officer. What do you think about this Discord leak and this sort of what's going on right now with, a 21-year-old guy sort of taking national secrets and plastering all over the internet?
I have to tell you, as you can imagine, my ire really arises when I hear these sorts of things. That guy ought to have the book thrown at him big time. I mean, prison, lifetime prison or whatever, but he needs to be made a model of this is not what you do. They need to really throw the book at him to get the word out there. And I understand there's a Whidbey Island connection or there's a woman who was up on Whidbey Island that was a pro-Russian advocate, and she's spreading that information as well, although it's modified, I understand. But anyway, no, I can't tell you how much anger that arises in me.
Craig is an attorney, a former attorney general, assistant attorney general. Yeah, what is your sort of read on this kind of stuff?
Well, you know, my read on it was the same as Truman's. It's a very dangerous precedent and crime, and it's not to be taken lightly. The cultural and sociological aspects of it are the one that really intrigued me. The fact of the role that social media plays in this, and the way it appears this young man at the age of 21 was sort of proud and sharing these things with his group without really giving it much thought as to, I mean, it was almost like playing a video game. It's hopefully there's not more of that in the works, but I'm afraid there is. I think that's an important aspect of this.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, we know that release of information like this can hurt. I mean, people lose their lives, right? The reason that this information is protected is that it's sensitive. People this information can expose vulnerabilities that puts our country in less of a position of being able to share our values across the world. Maybe some would argue that those values aren't appropriate to be shared, but I think in large part they certainly are. What I saw in the news was that this individual is from a military family. And certainly, you know, as a young person growing up and wanting to impress your friends, you know, we know that that's a pretty powerful force. But I hope that people who are considering taking a similar action will realize that, particularly if they have a heritage military family, it can be just disgraceful, you know, to your whole family heritage by not really honoring and protecting the integrity of the country regarding these really important pieces, you know, information that we use to make sure that we protect ourselves and our citizens. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully that message also rings through.
The oath that every military person takes is significant, and it should mean something powerful to that individual, and the more we diminish that, the more detrimental effect it has on all of us, I think. So
yeah, Craig, I had a question for you, Craig, and we probably don't have time to develop it. Maybe we should come back to it, but it seems to me that the issues of free speech and free press that apply to printed media and books and things like that don't seem to apply in the same way to the internet.
You froze.
Chat groups and things like that. And so do you think there's going to be some movement to put constraints on the internet, constraints on social media, similar to what we have in print media?
That's a good question. I do think there will be. The law has lagged way behind the development of social media. And there certainly is a push to bring some reasonable regulation there, like there's an attempt to bring reasonable regulation with regards to other constitutional rights. Right. I'll leave it at that.
Yep. Well, maybe a topic we can come back to at a future Brown briefly, because I think it's a fascinating thing that we'll see developing legally in sort of legal practice in the future. So for the next edition of the Brown Briefly, we'll feature Osha Christensen and Jason Johnson from Vashon Household discussing their work in the recent housing survey that Vashon Household completed. So for Esther, for Kevin, for Truman, for Craig, and I'm Bruce Hallman, we'll see you next week at the next Brown Briefly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you
Bye
all.
Now.
Have a good week.